Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Apologist segment of Arc Studies Live. I'm your host, Rick Young. Arc Studies Live is the blogcast radio outreach of the Apologetic Research Center. Arc is a Christian ministry specializing in evangelism, Christian apologetics, and counterculture studies. For more information about Arc, go to the World Wide Web at www.arcstudies.org. Welcome to this special evening edition of Arc Studies Live. I'm your host, Rick Young. During this special edition of Arc Studies Live, I scheduled this show for my new friend, Stanley, who called this morning, and I was forced to rush out of that show right in the middle of a conversation with him. And so I committed that I would create another show, even though it's been really a little difficult because we got a lot of snow up here today. And we got a lot of snow. I was shocked after I got off the air and my brother and I were going to shoot some pool. And my brother pointed out to me, he said, "You have looked outside." And when I looked outside, I realized how much snow had fallen. And I had to... We didn't get a chance to go and shoot because I had to go and get my daughter, and I just wouldn't make any sense to even go and shoot. And so at any rate, then I decided to take my other daughter to work. I just didn't want her out there driving in this kind of weather. What's interesting is there was last Christmas of 2012, right before Christmas, we got a real bad snow, and I told my daughter I didn't want to go to work. I didn't want her to drive to work, so I drove her to work because I was telling her how crazy people can drive. And guy drove right into the side of me to prove my point. So I just want to make sure that, you know, my family's safe. So at any rate, I drove her to work, so I got to pick her up this evening. And so it's really a little bit of a burden to do this show, but I did want to at least come out here and give Stanley the opportunity. Now, interestingly, after the show this morning, I had a conversation with Shanice on Facebook, and apparently this is a guy who first time I've ever encountered him, but apparently she's seen him around, and I guess he goes from show to show to show and just for the most part tries to frustrate people, or at least I don't want to apply motive on him. But that is what the end result is. You know, it's just basically to call into question what individuals are doing. And, you know, my thing is this, and Shawnee's, I absolutely trust her judgment. I thank God for my sister. But I also got a voicemail on my ministry line and an email. The voicemail just basically said, should have ditched him. It was a waste of time. You know, because apparently they're familiar with him as well. And, you know, that's his goal. Again, I can't imply motive on him. It very well may be. But even if it is, you know, I can't call that into question. You know, keep in mind, and I'm not trying to sound self-righteous here, but, you know, Christ came to his own received him not. You know, for me, I'm always looking for an opportunity. I don't know why he's in the position that he's in. I do know that for years, had you known me, you would have thought that I hated Christians. You know, I'm the guy who literally sat in the back of a church because my mother asked me to visit while I was home on long leave from the Marine Corps. And when the pastor from the pulpit asked me to move a little closer, I said no, and he kept encouraging me. I'm the guy who stood up in the church and told him, you concentrate on the sheep, I'm a wolf. I'm the guy who came really close to decking another preacher in the church because they were selling some fundraiser or whatever, and the preacher that was in charge of it, in my opinion, spoke sideways to my younger sister. And I told him right in the, I guess it was a praise and worship room. I don't know. It was like a smaller sanctuary in the upper part of the church. But I told him, they will find you with your toes facing heaven in this room. If I ever hear you speaking to my daughter like that. So a lot of people felt like I was absolutely anti-Christian. And I was not anti-Christian. What it was is that I had a lot of church hurt. Because I believed, I put a lot of trust in, you know, growing up, and I put a lot of trust in individuals whom I thought were sincere in their teaching of what I thought was God's word. I thought these people had red phones in their offices to God. I did. I mean, I used to hear things like only certain people can get a prayer through. And so I would absolutely, I trusted these people, you know, and when I found out the error that they were propagating, you know, I ended up in a state of massive church hurt. So as a result of that, that's why I conducted myself the way I conducted myself. Now, no one else saw that. And in fact, when my friend Keith gave his life to the Lord or rededicated his life to the Lord, when he did that, he didn't even tell me because they saw me, you know, emasculate Christians. I mean, the worst thing someone witnessing could ever do is approach me, you know, and it was because I had massive church hurt and I was frustrated that people were out there pushing something they didn't understand. You know, I used to make a verse up, you know, when people would come out and tell me what I needed to do. You know, I would say, how can a man judge a man but when he's but a man? 1 Corinthians chapter 21, verse 16. And I don't remember chapter and verse. I remember it was always like chapter 20 or 21. Now, I knew that there were only 16 chapters in 1 Corinthians. But I'm telling you, there was not one time that I said that I did not have a Christian say, oh, you know your word. And then I would just go in. I just made that up. That's exactly, you're not people, you're sheeple. And I would go in and emasculate them. Even had a couple of them were ready to fight me, which was fine with me at the time because I felt that they were, it was hypocritical. And so coming from that type of background, that's why when I see someone who appears to, be anti-Christ, in the sense of, I don't mean the Antichrist, I mean against Christ, that's all Antichrist means. When I find someone like that, you know, I really want to know why. How did they get in the state that they're in? And I mean, maybe it's not for me to know, but I have to give every opportunity because I know exactly where I was. Now, in talking to him in my broadcast this morning, I know it was tedious for a lot of people. You know, I was watching some of the people, some of the guests that were popping in and popping out throughout the broadcast. And so I know it may have gotten on some folks' nerves. But it was intended. I mean, not intended, but it's going to be tedious, especially when you have someone who is absolutely convinced that they're sure of where they are now. They're absolutely convinced of it, though they can't tell you where they are now. They can tell you where others say they are now, but they don't know. And so it is going to be tedious. And so that was the intent, you know, for those of you who may have never encountered that. My intent when I would ask him questions, for instance, when he made reference to in the Bible, it says that if you don't, you know, pray on Sunday, it's the death penalty. I knew what he was alluding to. He was alluding to the Sabbath and the laws, involving the Sabbath. You know, if anyone does any work on the Sabbath, you know, that it was the death penalty. That was the law. But, you know, by making light reference to it, saying things like, yeah, you know, I know what the Bible says. If you don't pray on Sunday, that's not what it says. And it may seem like it's a little thing and like I'm nitpicking. I'm not. I'm just trying to force him to read it, you know, because otherwise he'll spit everything. So I'm trying to force him to read it. When he's talking about slavery in the Bible, look, there was slavery in the Bible. In fact, the book of Philemon in the New Testament is actually a letter written from the Apostle Paul to his friend Philemon concerning Philemon's runaway slave, Onesimus. In that book, the Apostle Paul actually cracks a joke or what we would call a pun on Onesimus's name. Onesimus means useless. And so when Paul wrote the letter to Philemon concerning him, he said this. Let me see. He said at verse 10, and it means useless or profitless. All right? And so this is what he said. I appeal to you for my son, Onesimus, whom I begotten while in my chains, who once was unprofitable to you, but now is profitable to you and me. I'm sending him back. Now, that's a joke or a pun played on Onesimus' name, because Onesimus means profitless or are useless. So let me read it to you with the understanding of his name. He said, I appeal to you concerning my son, useless, whom I begotten while my chains, who was useless to you, but now is useful to both you and me. So he made a pun on his name. This is, it's actually a letter written to Paul's friend concerning his runaway slave, whom Paul sent back. And so, yes, there is slavery in the Bible. It absolutely is. And I don't want to get into, well, it's a different kind of slavery than the slavery in America. I don't want to get all into that, because all of that is irrelevant. It's irrelevant. You know, the fact that it is, all right, because the Bible deals with real-time, real-world things. It is not a made-up storybook. It deals with real-time, real-world things, and the message of it is always the mission. The message is the mission. Now, what people would like to see, and you find this amongst people like Stanley, people like individuals who are in the Church Folk Revolution, and other different things, some of the people in it, is that what people want to see is social activism. That's what they want to see. And they want to see more. So, as a matter of fact, I was listening to TJ a little bit earlier on Church Folk Revolution, and he was talking about that. They would like to have some pastors who would come in and do what they're doing. And I'm not kicking him for that. I'm saying that that's not what the Word of God is about. That is not its intent. You know, the zealots would look for something like that. But Christ and his disciples weren't zealots. In fact, when Peter acted like a zealot and cut off the man's ear when they came to get Jesus healed his ear. You live by the sword, you die by the sword. That's not what we're here for. When the Pharisees tried to trap him, say, oh, should we be paying taxes? And tried to draw him into social issues. Jesus said, whose face is on that? Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. That's the secular world. And render unto God what is God's. You don't mix the two. unfortunately, we see a lot of that, and we expect a lot of that. We see it, for instance, in our political system with the Republican right or the quote-unquote conservatives. They're really not conservatives because I'm a true conservative. I'm a biblical conservative. And as a biblical conservative, I consider that liberal, to allow the Word of God to be prostituted like that. I'm set for the defense of that. And it's not just the Republican right, it's also the Democratic left, who would take it and use it for social change. I'm not saying that things don't need to be done politically, and in fact, you know, I actively politically participate in the politics of my day. But that's not my Christian mission. That is my sin. As a citizen of the United States, it's a right that I have. It's a right and privilege I have. But if I lived in Bangladesh and I didn't have it, I'd function under the Bangladeshi system. But the mission of every Christian everywhere at every time is the ministry of reconciliation without variation. Dominion theology, like we see on our political right, or it's not liberation theology like we see on our political left. And unfortunately, that's what these people want to see. And they begin to think that because you're doing those things, because you're performing the will of good, that somehow that is the will of God. Those of you who've been listening to my show for years, I used to talk about that a lot. We've confused the will of good for the will of God. We've confused the gift of gab for the gift of God. We're caught up into events. We have an event mentality as opposed to an evangelistic mentality. All of these subtle changes that are good things, but they're not the right thing. If Satan can't stop you from doing a good thing, he'll encourage you to do a right thing. Now, I'm not saying this, again, I participate in my political process, always have. Well, there was a time I didn't. There was a time I took the position that I can't change it, so why? And I'm talking about from a Christian perspective, but that was the view I had. But when I looked at it, that by doing that, I wasn't participating in the events of my day or utilizing that. That becomes an extremist position. That's just like saying, okay, well, if that's the case, the logical conclusion of that is, well, if I can't change it and God's in control, well, why work? Why should I? You know, and so I do participate, but it is not my Christian duty to participate, and I actually have heard pastors say that. As Christians, it's your responsibility to be involved in the political system. You won't find that in the Word of God. As a matter of fact, the Word of God says in the book of 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 4, no man who wars, and every Christian battle is not against flesh and blood, or should be. If you're not, then that's the battle you need to be in. No man who wars entangles himself with the affairs of this life to please him who called him to be a soldier. We should not be entangled in those things. I vote for who I vote for. If they lose, then I keep it moving. It's not like, oh, Satan won and, you know, God doesn't want that person in office and God's against them. That's what's wrong with our political system right now. It used to be a system where individuals think, well, my view is right, you know, I think you got some good points, but my view is right. You know, I believe it's right. I believe it's the best one. And because it was right and you believe you're right, then let's compromise and find common ground. But because of the religious folk who got involved, your position is no longer right. It's righteous. You see, and there is no compromise when it comes to righteousness. So when I make my political views, which I thought were right before, and I can acknowledge that there are other views that are also right. They're different than mine. I think mine would bear, you know, more fruit toward what we're doing, but we can compromise. That's now gone. Now it's like, because I'm righteous, anything less than righteous is evil. And that's exactly what you see happening. That's why we're polarized. We're polarized not because of the secular world. We're polarized because of the Christians. And actually, let me rephrase that. The religious mindset, because I don't accept that everybody involved in that is Christian. Some people decided that this is a way to manipulate the masses, so you have to adopt the language, and so therefore they would adopt the language in order to accomplish their political goals. And that's on a political right and on a political left. You know, Reverend Jesse Jackson, I don't think I've ever heard him say the word Jesus. And I'm 53 years old. I don't think I've ever heard him say the word Jesus, the right Reverend Jesse Jackson. Some people get involved in the political system because it gives them a captive audience that has to listen because they're convinced, because this actually ties into the legalistic thing. Because of the cyanide mindset, you're taught that God's going to reveal to his leaders and they'll let you know. And so therefore, these people say, okay, that's the captive audience. And so they step right in that position and say, this is what God would have us do. You won't find it in the Word of God. Not at all. A lot of things that you find, you know, like the guy who, the preacher who was talking about sending all gay people to an island. You know, hey, leave them out there. This is a preacher. This was last year. Leave them all out there, and in one generation they'll be dead because they can't reproduce. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, and then he quoted Leviticus 20:13. You know, it said that they should be killed. And I was like, how did you get to Leviticus 20:13 and skip Leviticus 20:10? How in the heck could you possibly claim that you are righteous and standing for righteousness and actually skip that to make your point? What does Leviticus 20:10 say? Well, let's read it. Leviticus 20:10 says, the man who commits adultery, well, let me read 13 for you first. If a man lies with a man as he lies with a woman, both of them have committed an abomination, they shall surely be put to death, their blood shall be upon them. It's true. That's what the Word of God says. And everybody's like, yeah. Well, 20:10 says, the man who commits adultery with another man's wife, who commits adultery with his neighbor's wife, the adulterer and the adulteress, shall surely be put to death. You don't hear, yeah, because half the people sitting in churches are in that state. That's a misapplication of the law. If you claim that you're under the law, I'm not. And so Stanley, like others, and I kind of halfway didn't expect Stanley to come back. You know, I hope he did, but I halfway didn't expect him to. Because over the years, you know, to those of you who listen, every time, and Stanley, and I'm not trying to be condescending to him, Stanley basically was a rhetorician, in my opinion. And I'm not trying to be unkind to him. The point is that everything that he was saying relied on, you know, just rhetoric. You know, he wanted to Stanleyize everything. Now, I'm saying that because those of you who've listened to my show over the years have heard others who weren't rhetoricians who at least thought they knew and could mount a better defense, and none of them ever came back. All of them always claimed, and every show is still out there. Yeah, I'm going to research that. And, yeah, I'm going to come back. And have never come back, even in this situation where I scheduled a show and they just didn't come back. Now, I'm not saying they're not coming back because they're afraid, because they have nothing to be afraid of with me. I'm just saying that the most difficult thing that any man or woman can do in life is to acknowledge that they were just wrong. Anyone who I've ever been privileged to disciple, I've always told, you know, you got to learn that. If you don't know something, just say, I don't know, but I'll get back with you. That's the most difficult thing. In the Garden of Eden, you know, Eve was wrong. Adam was wrong. But when God came to Adam and said, what have you done? Adam said, well, the woman you gave me. So, it's, you know, you gave her to me, and she said it was her fault. It's you two's fault. Not just I was wrong. And we still carry on like that to this day. And so, at any rate, just wanted to make sure I had some time. pardon me. Just wanted to have some time out here for Stanley, who I don't think he'll call. I hope he does. But I know he'll listen to the show. I know he'll listen. And so I did want to talk a little bit. You know what? I tell you what. I'll wait another 30 minutes, and then I'll take a musical interlude. And if he's not here, then we'll go to about 9:30 unless something else happens. Again, this is the Ark Studies Live broadcast. What I want to talk about tonight is what caused cause. My phone line is open if you want to give me a call. Area code 646-652-2905, 652-2905, confusing myself. And lines are open. I don't have an agenda other than to just talk about what caused cause. Why individuals, it is so important for them to recognize or to not recognize the existence of God. All right, but let me read something to you real quick, and then we'll talk about what caused cause. Because I hope some of you actually looked up the hormone relaxin that I talked about with Stanley. I hope you guys looked that up. Let me tell you, I didn't learn that in some Christian apologetics class at all. I learned that in Lamaze. When my wife was pregnant with my son, my oldest child, we were in Lamaze class, and I'm sitting here listening to the Lamaze instructor, and she was explaining to us or demonstrating to us how we should help our spouses up, our wives up if they need to get up, and why we should not pull them up by their arms, and she explained the hormone relaxant. And I'm sitting there and I'm listening to this, and I literally went to tears in a Lamaze class, you know, and the guys are chiding me a little bit. They're like, oh, look at this guy, emotional, happy. They just didn't realize. At that moment, I just started thinking about divine design. I had already known about the fontanelles, the overlapping skull. And I was already fascinated with that. And then when she told us this, I was absolutely floored. Now, relaxin is a hormone that's produced by the ovaries during pregnancy. The purpose in this hormone is it relaxes the ligaments so that the pelvic, you know, area, the whole cervical area can expand in preparation for the birth. Not only that, it inhibits muscular contractions of the uterus, which would happen and cause spontaneous abortion because as the baby grows. It stops that from occurring. Wait a minute. Doesn't stop there. It stimulates the growth of glands in breast that cause milk. And guess how long relaxin is in a woman's body? From the time she gets pregnant to 24 hours after birth. It's the only time. Explain that through evolution. Understand that evolution, and when I talk about evolution, I believe in evolution. I believe in microevolution. I don't believe in macroevolution. Microevolution is nothing more than natural selection. Now, we can't run away from terms like that because all natural selection is our ability to adapt to our environments. That's why some people are black, some are white. black people adapted to hotter environments with the more melanin that serves as a sunscreen, the curlier hair to release heat, the wider nostrils because the air is thicker, the higher leg muscle pulled higher in the leg. And by the way, I actually did a report on that in high school. It had nothing to do with God. White people have the straighter hair, matted down hair, that not matted down, but it seals better because it keeps heat in, the thinner noses for the thinner hair, the wider calf muscles, and the less melanin in the skin. People are adapted to the environments that they are, but none of us is becoming something else. That would be macroevolution. Microevolution is our ability to adapt to our environments. That's all it is. And so I don't give them those words. It's natural selection. Now, from Darwinian evolution, microevolution, which they identify as natural selection, the ability to adapt, is the vehicle to macroevolution. They teach that because of, all evolution is a series of unintended mutations that somehow benefited the host. And because they benefited the host better than everyone else, the host was able to survive better. I've always been amazed that how do you take that and multiply that by the thousands and thousands of creatures it would take in order to maintain the gene pool for something like that? If it's a mutation in one, then how does it carry over to the other? Even if you wanted to say that that was possible, the reason, from my perspective, that that's not possible is because these mutations are minute and take place slowly over millions of years. Now, let's apply that to what we just talked about with relaxin and the fontanelles of a skull. From evolution, an evolutionary mindset, they would a macroevolutionary mindset or Darwinian evolution, they would teach that these adaptations were slower and slower over millions of years, and as each mutation developed in the offspring that better, you know, facilitated that process, you know, those are the ones who continue to survive. My problem with that is if this doesn't work the first time, they die. There is no couple of days, let alone millions of years. Doesn't work the first time. If there is no relaxin, then there is no spreading of the pelvic region. No cervical expansion in a woman does not occur. Her hips stay right where they are, too small for anything to pass through without killing it and her. Not only that, there is no creation or no stimulation of glands in the breast in preparation to feed what's coming from her. That doesn't occur. Without the fontanelles separated, even with the fontanelles, the baby would not fit. It takes a combination of these fontanelles. I'm watching an explosion in the room, and I have to be careful because there's often a group of individuals who love to explode a room. And I'm going to control that. Okay, I got about two calls. All right, I'm going to take these calls, but I'm not going to take any nonsense, guys. As a matter of fact, I remember a while back when this happened, it's just a bunch of kids sitting around and they're floating around looking for rooms to crash. Whenever you see it leap up, if you've noticed, it's leaped up to 23. All right. Let's see. I'm going to take this individual Okay. Multiple phones. Yeah. All right, I'm kind of hesitant on these. Rob, is that you?
Rob.
Area code 661-748. Are you just listening, or did you have something to say? Okay, I take that as just listening. All right, let's see. Maxitizer.
Hi, I'm not actually Maxitizer. I'm his father. I'm a 65-year-old Jewish man. My name is Frederick. Hi, sorry about that. I just have a few questions about, like, the origin of man. I've recently converted to Catholicism, but I believed in evolution until I started listening to these talks online. They started talking about creation, and I was just wondering what your stand on like evolution is. Do you believe in it? Do you not believe in it? Like, what do you think is the next step for man? Do you think we're going to evolve? Or do you think, like, I don't even know what to say. Like, I don't even know. Like, what do you think is next for man? Do you think we're going to turn into, like, are we going to get taller or smarter or, I don't even know. Oh, God.
Well, okay, I tell you what, I'm going to put you on hold and I'll answer that, okay?
Okay, yeah, no problem.
Right. Yeah, see, I'm watching. That's how come it's leaped up to 36. That's why I went into moderator mode for those of you who are listening. It's again, individuals. Let's see. All right. Maxitizer's grandfather. All right, I'll answer your question. All right. Even though I'm not sure, I'm not convinced that you're who you said you were. I'll answer your question. As I was saying before you came on, I believe in microevolution. It's just natural selection. What I don't believe in is macroevolution. Man will not become anything else. So the next state for this, for man, is the state that he's in right now, unless, from a Christian worldview, Christ cracks the sky. That's my position on that. All right. Looking at this number, 01166, and I'm going to call whoever you are. You can state your question, and then I'll answer your question, or you can blurt out, because often what happens when you get trolled, it's like a bunch of guys sitting like in their parents' house in their underwear, and their goal is to be able to get in a word before they're muted, all right? And so I don't know what the joy is in that, but I'll let them get a word in as I take the call. 01166, your question or comment. All right. Clicked him off. All right. Area code 732-270.
Hey, how you doing
today? Comment. I'm good.
That's not too good. I wanted to ask you a personal question about your relationship with Christ, because there's a lot of phonies running around these days. It's so hard to tell the demons from the holy men. My question for you is, when Hosanna touches you personally, does he wear a condom?
That's really clever. When Hosanna, that's really clever. All right, so at any rate, again, you recognize who these guys are, and they'll repeatedly call in. And I take the joy out of what they do. Like that guy that was just speaking, You know, I just envision somebody sitting in their tidy whities with, you know, a mud stain on the back of it in their mother's house, and they're calling each other and just, you know, let's just call and see if you can say something stupid. You know, I'm not offended by it. You know, if any of my listeners are offended, I apologize, but I'm not offended by it. I am in moderator mode, and that really took the joy out of it from them, because at the same time, they like to go into robo-scroll, and I kind of took the joy out of that for them because I was watching, and as it exploded, that's the telltale sign. All of a sudden, it starts exploding because they move like lemming in a group. All right, and so a couple of them have tried to post things. Let's see. They've tried to post things, and I'm not going to approve anything that they post. So, you know, either they'll listen to the show, and they're more than welcome to sit there and listen, or the joy will be gone. All right, I'll give one more of them because I haven't had this number, 438-396.
Hey, how are you?
How you doing?
It's Stanley, how are you?
Good.
It's Stanley.
How are you?
How are you? Very good, very good.
I'm good.
I did go get the information that you said to go get about what you're talking about. I didn't know about that.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that you told me that information, because as soon as you told me that, I went to get it. And, yeah, you were right. I didn't know about that. So I appreciate the information. The only thing that I have to see, because I respect what you see, there's many things that you said, and I did re-listen to the show. I did re-listen to many things that you said and everything, and you seem a very knowledgeable person in evolution, and I give you more credit than me. You know more than me, and you seem to be very knowledgeable, which is great to hear as a Christian, who has a Christian point of view. To finish the thing that I said, the thing I have is, in evolution, I hear you come with great critics, with great things, you're precise, you go with facts and things like that. And I agree, and I appreciate that. But when we switch it around to God in creationists, I don't see, in my opinion, that's my opinion, I don't see the same thoughtful, like saying, Stanley, go get this book, let me show you this, go to the museum, let me show you that, prove my case without a shadow of a doubt that Genesis happened, that Adam and Eve happened, and then I cannot make a case. Because you're for truth, like you kept on saying, and you're very honest. You seem like to be an apologist that goes with facts. He doesn't care about feelings and things like that. You go with facts, and I appreciate that. That's why I call you back. That's the question I'm asking, because if you can answer that question, then there would be a lot of people that would convert to Christianity.
And if you would, just narrow it down to just a question again. Are you asking me? Go ahead.
The creation, okay, there's, like you said there's two ways. Either evolution is true or we came from God.
Right.
I'm taking you back your word. Evolution, you
yes.
seem to be destroying it. I don't know every part of it. I'm looking at this stuff, but you're very knowledgeable. Now, let's take the second part, creation. Where is your proof? No feeling, not the Bible, but the same proof that you're asking me to say, come with facts, don't come with suspension, don't come with words, don't come with things, come with facts, come with it. Because if you're going to call me, you're going to come with facts. I'm asking you, where's your facts so I can look it up and not come with the Bible and the feeling, because interpretation is different for everybody.
Okay. Let me just clarify one thing for you. I want you to come with evidence, because anything is a fact.
Evidence. You came with stuff in evolution, and I have to see and say, oh, he knows those things, and I give respect when you know things. I have no problem with it. But that, I wish there was that sense of criticism when we come to Christian. They don't have your sense. They don't have that sense of saying, okay, let me prove you without a shadow of a doubt that creation, that's the way it is. And no feeling with this is how it is.
Let me clarify something. Go ahead. Right.
Or believe God exists and this is the proof. Without a child, without condition, without death, this is the final proof. This is my only proof that death. It's either you believe it or not, but this is a proof that you cannot deny. Then I'd be like, okay. We're talking. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. So I am going to answer your question. Just for the sake of not distraction, I'm going to put you on hold. I'll let you back in, but I just want to – I'm going to answer your question. I'm going to take about 5 minutes, okay? Don't hang up. All right? Stanley?
No, I'm not going to hang out. I'm listening to your answer. I'm not hanging up. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Now, because I'm speaking not only to Stanley but everybody else who's tuned in to listen to this broadcast, let me state at the outset, and I've said this before, if you've listened to my broadcast on this subject, I make this point all the time. It's not a matter of facts. It's a matter of evidence. It's not a matter of proof. It's a matter of evidence. And it sounds like it's a word game, but it's not. Evidence is something that will lead to a conclusion. Proof sounds like something that will lead to the same thing, but the word is kind of thrown around loosely, so I prefer the word evidence. Now, let me emphasize, and those who've listened to me over the years have heard me say this. When you're talking about your five senses, with your five senses, there's absolutely nothing in existence, nothing, either theistically or atheistically, that can be proved 100%, nothing. Now, Christians are gasping because I believe that God exists 100%. I do. But when I say 100%, what I'm talking about is, because this is where that goes, well, can you point to where God is? Well, I can't point to where God is, so I can't prove it 100%. To me, that's a word game. All right? Evidence, on the other hand, right now, you all are sitting in your houses. All right? You're probably sitting on chairs. Now, the reason why you're sitting on houses and sitting on your chairs in absolute comfort, or laying on your bed in absolute comfort, is because you have placed your faith in evidence. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, it's faith because you are trusting that whoever calculated the empirical stress formulae of your house did it accurately, that the manufacturer of your chair or your bed or your table did it accurately. And it's evidenced by the fact that your house hasn't fallen yet. You live in it every day. You sat in this chair every day. It holds your weight every day. You lay on your bed every day. Those are things that make up evidence that I can trust these things, even though I've never met the person who calculated the empirical stress formulae or the person who designed the furniture. And so in reality, we make faith decisions every day. When I was talking to Stanley earlier, the reason why I was trying to make him understand, and I kept asking him, who is the common ancestor? No one knows, not even evolutionists. It is a faith system. That was my point. They say he exists, but they don't know who he is, but they believe he's there. Believe and faith are synonyms, same word. All right? They believe he's there. They have faith that he's there. They're synonymous. All right? And my point was proving to him that it was a faith system. All right. Now, if both are faith systems, which ones generate evidence that can be relied upon is the question. Now, when we look at origins or cause, two things is true. Either we evolved or we were created. Now, at the onset of that, one of them already leaves room leaves a gap or room for doubt. Why? Because evolution does not take you to the beginning. It doesn't tell you what cause. It tells you how cause happened. The Big Bang Theory, tightly compacted ball of matter, spinning counterclockwise 4.5 trillion years ago, exploded. And as it exploded, all the matter that currently makes up everything in our universe situated itself over the last, you know, eons. That's the evolutionary mindset. Now, my question there is always, where did the energy come from? Not using theistic mindset to counter that, but just staying in the scientific realm. Using the laws of thermodynamics, entropy. Nothing. Everything has to be infused with energy. Where did the energy come from to cause this to spin? And there's never an answer. At that point, there's a breaking down of the evolutionary mindset, except for those who say, well, the energy came from the giant crunch before then, as the universe contracted into this tightly compacted ball of matter, and that pressure built up the energy, which caused it to then explode again. Okay, well, let's say that's true. How many times do we have to go back? Where, at some point, there had to be a first explosion. At some point, there had to be energy infused. Evolutionary mindset teaches that if you had enough years or enough eons or enough billions and millions and trillions of years, that we'll forget and not talk about it. But you have to deal with what caused. Now, from a theistic mindset, what caused? God. God caused. And when people ask, where did God come from? I say God lives forever. Now, people shut down at living forever, but let's look at some evidence at the concept of forever, all right? Because evolutionists accept that forever exists because they teach that these crunches, bangs, have gone on ad infinitum in history, on into forever. My questioning to them is, at some point, you're still not answering where the energy came from. There had to be a first, using their theory, not me postulating that there had to be energy. They said the energy already was. That violates the laws of thermodynamics, their very laws, right? Now, my God, or the God of the Christian scriptures, is not subject to their laws from the Christian worldview. In fact, he exists outside of creation. And when we say he's existed from eternity, well, how can there be an eternity? Well, let me ask you this. How far does outer space go? Just want to give you a moment to think about that. When you step outside and you look into space, how far does it go? When I was 12, I thought I solved that problem. Really, I really did. I was sitting there looking at the stars, and I said, it runs into a brick wall. And I was like, okay, I got that one. And literally, this is a real thought process, 11, 12-year-old. Then I started thinking, well, then how far does the brick wall go? And I was like, well, it runs into some water. So I was like, well, then how far does the water go? Well, it runs into another brick wall. Well, how far does that wall go? I don't know. And I just let it go. And I remember thinking about that because I couldn't wrap my mind around it. And I refer to that because I was at a state at 11, 12 years old where I had to acknowledge that though I could apprehend that space went on forever. In other words, I accepted it. I still could not comprehend it. But I had to apprehend it or accept it because I could see it. It was evidential. It was there. the expanse was there. I submit to you that when I speak of God as having existed from eternity or forever, it's the same concept as space. And even though I can't comprehend a being that could live forever, I accept it. Why do I accept it? Because it is the only solution to what caused cause. But it doesn't stop there. That's just going all the way back to origins. When I began to look at creation itself, I recognize that it's far too complex for evolutionary thought to have been true. Far too complex. Now, I understand both are faith systems, but one is a faith system that doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense how a single cell amoeba in a pit of primordial ooze of amino acids 4.5 billion years ago, it makes no sense how that just became alive. But let's say that happened. Now, I'm speaking philosophically here. Let's say that happened. It happened once. Let's say it happened once. How did that thing reproduce? How did it reproduce? Because keep in mind, evolution is over millions of years. How did this single-cell amoeba ultimately become a person sitting talking on Blog Talk Radio? How did it become a crustacean, let alone a human being, philosophically? But let's just say it did. Let's say it's a single-cell amoeba. There were two of them. And they were so evenly matched that they could copulate and they could reproduce. All right, let's say that that's true. All right, as this primordial ooze with the amino acids begins to shift as the earth begins to cool and the environment begins to change, how do they survive that? If I change your environment, I don't care, let's say billions of them had now somehow miraculously appeared in this primordial pit of ooze and amino acids. If I poured fresh water in that amino acid and changed the composition of the ooze that they were in, the vat of liquids they were in, they would die. Even as if I pumped methane gas into your bedroom or in your office or wherever you are, you wouldn't adapt to it. You see, there is no millions of years for you to adapt to it. You die. Individuals will teach you that similar creates same. If you're listening to my broadcast via the internet, one of the pictures that I put up there that's floating around as they pass through, if you put your mouse over it, it'll stop it. There are like four or five, let me see if I can pull it up while I'm talking to you. There are roughly four or five different types of creatures. Give me a moment. Let me pull it up so I can look at it while I'm talking to you. All right. All right. If you're looking at the picture, where is it at? Not yet. But, yeah, if you happen to be listening to the show via the internet, you should be able to see this. Let's see. Okay, here it is. All right. If you're taking a look at it, there's a fish, a salamander, a tortoise, a chicken, a pig, a cow, a rabbit, and a human. At the zygote stage, they all look alike, all of them. And then there are three steps, and it shows how they actually become different things. But when you look at them in the zygote stage, and I encourage you, just click on that and take a look at it. They all appear similar. Similar does not mean same. Evolutionary mindset says, if I can pick an animal that looks something like you, like a monkey, or a chimp, actually, or a bonobo, is supposed to be the closest to human beings, and because they have five fingers, and roughly they still have hands on their feet, but still it's five, and they got legs, and they can stand up and walk bipedal, then you can imagine that similar is same. They must have come from a common ancestor. But there's no evidence, virtually no evidence of that. None. It does not exist. It's a phase system. So when I compare that system, when I compare the reality that, you know, as I was talking about, we're relaxing in the fontanelles, how those two things could not, they had to have been created or designed in, because keep in mind, one is in the mother to allow the birth canal to open, the other is in the breast so that once the baby comes out, it can feed. What would cause that? Because keep in mind, according to Darwinian evolution, every mutation had to be beneficial at the moment. She didn't just develop breasts for milk. She didn't just develop breasts for milk in case a baby can possibly be born a couple of million years from now. These are things that took place at the same time. And so when I see that type of precise design, even as when I look at the evolutionary mindset, you know, and they're talking about all of these things occurred, then what caused them? What caused cause? They did not just cause themselves. Even Darwin acknowledged that in speaking about evolution, that it would sound like he was speaking of a sentient being. Even Darwin had to acknowledge that in Origin of the Species. So when you ask me, do I turn the same high-powered evidence towards God that I turn towards evolution? I do. You see, because you're jumping straight to Christian. I'm not. I'm just talking about there either evolution happened or a God. We're not even talking about who he is yet. A God. And so when I look at the evidence for both of those things, the theistic worldview holds sway. There's too much design. Write this down, Stanley, and I'm about to let you back in. Write down bombardier beetle. Bombardier beetle. Okay? The bombardier beetle, and look it up. The bombardier beetle is a fantastic creature this is fantastic. It's an insect that literally can fire rocket fuel from its butt. The chemical that fires from its butt is the composition of rocket fuel. Now, this is how it works in this animal. He has two different compartments that holds two distinct chemicals, two separate chemicals. These two chemicals, if mixed, become that fuel and fire. You can pull it up on YouTube, too, and take a look at it. And he can also aim his butt and fire at things. Like when a mouse tries to eat it, he'll shoot him in the face. All right? So these two chemicals. Now, not only does he have these two chemicals, when he fires these two chemicals into the tube, because they explode when mixed, it would blow him up. So there's a third chemical that inhibits the reaction until he fires. You can't explain that by chance. One chemical without the other is no benefit. Mice eat him, he no longer exists. Both chemicals without the inhibitor, he fires them into the tube on his, well, you got to have the tube too. Sometimes talk about the tube. Without the tube, he just like fires them into his butt and blows up. But let's ignore the fact that the design of the tube is there. He fires the two chemicals in the tube. Without the third inhibitor, he still blows up. But instead, he fires the two, and the third inhibitor prevents it from blowing up until he squirts it out his butt and literally burns the face of other of creatures trying to eat him. Look it up, the bombardier beetle. Just like the relaxin in a woman and the fontanelles in the child, where all of these things are taking place, multiple things that allow this process, the same thing happens with the smallest creatures. When I look at these creatures, I see design. Now, if I'm walking up the street and I find a watch on the ground, I don't say, look what time, wind, and erosion has made. I recognize by the movement of that watch that it's a finely tuned piece of equipment that has inner workings I can't begin to comprehend. But I have to accept them because I'm looking at them. And it did not happen by chance. So if I accept that this watch was created then, not random mutations over time, but it was created, then I have to accept that there's a watchmaker. Even if I can't comprehend him, I have to accept that something caused that cause. Now, again, you jump to Christianity. Prove Christianity. No, we're back to just proving either there is a God. We haven't even talked about whether he's Allah or Vishnu any of many other creatures or deities, rather. I'm just talking about that there is a theistic, there's evidence for a theistic origin of creation. There's more evidence by design of creation than there is for evolution, because even in evolution there's precision that's not explained. All right, Stanley, I'm letting you in here.
Yes, great thing that you're saying and everything, but in my case, who's an atheist and I'm listening to what you're saying, that still doesn't prove to me God. We're not even going Christian God, like you said. That doesn't prove me God. You said if evolution can't prove without a shadow, and that's where I have a problem. You want all the answers possible of an evolutionist. You want the maximum to point up. Well, I feel that's what
Stanley,
I feel. That's what
let's
I hear from
ground
you.
Rules out. You can. You can.
Okay. Let's not.
Hold on.
Let's
hold on. One second. Let me lay some ground rules down to you real quick. Let me lay some ground rules down to you. You see, because you're trying to work yourself up into this generalizing again. All right. No, I asked you, don't say something you don't know about specifically. I asked you, all right?
Okay, you asked me things. Okay, fine. You asked me things that I don't know specifically and everything. But I feel that you're asking question that needs to be answered, and that if a person like me tells you I don't know, that means I don't know. And that's a perfect answer to say, I don't know. I'd rather have somebody tell me I don't know than invent something that's not true. Okay? You're coming with a concept of God, and you're not answering the question. You are saying, and that's what I heard, you are saying if evolution is false, Stanley, then you cannot have a watch without a watchmaker, so you need a design without a designer. That doesn't prove it. That's not an evidence for me. For me, it's not an evidence that you're just telling me this logically, it should be this way. Logically, there's many things that should be this way, but it's not. There's many proof in life that we have logically it should be this, but it's not. So we could go logically this, but that doesn't prove me. I just want to finish. I want you to do the same thing that you're doing with evolution. I want you to decorticate this like you were doing a theory of creation. Don't come back to evolution. You made your point. I've heard it. There's many things you've said. I'm going to retape it. I'm going to listen to what you say. I want you to make the case of that. Not if this is not true, then God. Because that brings, you know what we say as atheists, that brings the God gap. And I don't want to go there. We always say, you go again with the God gap.
Well, that brings what?
The God gap. You know, the God gap. The thing that if we can't explain things, then God must have done it. That's what we call God gap. A lot of atheists.
That's what you call God gap. Okay. Well, let me say this. I am doing to you exactly what I'm doing exactly what I did to you. And if you've ever listened to my broadcast before, I absolutely hold everyone to evidence. Now, what I did to you, Stanley, was you made its claim, and I said, prove the claim you're making.
Okay.
All right? I didn't ask you to prove evolution. I did not. I said, what do you believe? You said evolution. I said, okay, why do you believe evolution? You said we have a common ancestor. I said, who is it? I asked you for specifics. So anything you ask me specifically, I will answer specifically.
But I'm asking you specifically, prove God. There you go. Specifically, don't come with the thing because it's not proving any.
Okay.
It's not. Well, it may be in your eyes it is, but it's not in my eyes. It's not.
Of course it's not in your eyes, Stanley.
But, sir, it's not in my eyes, and the thing that...
All right, I muted you. All right, I muted you because you're talking yourself in a circle again. All right, listen, Stanley. Listen to this. All right, we either got here, and I need you to listen. Don't use the time to think about what you're going to say next. Either we evolved or we were created. I proved to you that evolution does not explain what caused cause. Evolution does not explain the intimate design of creatures. It does not. It does not prove how the bombardier beetle exists, does not prove how, for instance, the what I talked about with relaxin and the fontanelles, and I could go on and on and on. You know, evolution has said, well, the Archaeopteryx, the two birds that you see floating across my screen, if you're listening on the Internet, the first one is an artist's rendition of Archaeopteryx. Archaeopteryx was, like Stanley says, there has to be a common ancestor. Well, at one point, until roughly about, I guess about four or five decades ago, scientists thought that Archaeopteryx was the transitional link between dinosaurs and birds. Because Archaeopteryx, they said, was the first reptile who had wings and he had claws on his wings and he had teeth, right? Now, that was the transitional form between dinosaurs and birds, right? That's what they said happened to all dinosaurs. They evolved into birds. The problem is, they said he was also the first bird. The problem is, since then, they found birds older than Archaeopteryx. It's kind of hard to be the missing link between reptiles and birds if there are birds before you, number one. And number two, the second picture that you see is a bird called a hoatzin that lives in South America that looks exactly like Archaeopteryx. In fact, it has claws on its wings, like Archaeopteryx. You can go on YouTube and watch them. They build their nests out over the Amazon, and if something comes out and tries to eat the babies jump out the nest into the water until the danger leaves, and then they use their claws to climb back up into the nest. All right? Another picture I didn't put out there, but you can look this up. It's called a coelacanth. Coelacanth. What a coelacanth is a fish that lived in the Cretaceous period. And in fact, according to evolution, and it's spelled C-O-E-L-A-C-A-N-T-H-S, it supposedly was extinct in the Cretaceous period. We're talking long before man. Until they found a live one in 1938. Now they find them all over the place all the time. And I could go on and on and on and on. Neanderthal supposedly evolved into Cro-Magnon until they found, and I have the newspaper clipping in my Bible from, I believe it was 1987, when they finally came to the conclusion that not only did not one evolve into the other, but they lived simultaneously and fought wars against each other. And so when I look at the evidence that evolution provides, when it says that we got where we are because we evolved, there's zero evidence of anything changing to anything else. Zero evidence. In fact, it goes worse than that. Because of the intense design of creatures, it could not have happened randomly over millions of years. Because without the design, they would have died. Let me give you a good example. The whale, according to evolutionary mindset, was once in that primordial ooze with you and I and had a common ancestor and eventually crawled all the way out on land, had land, was on land, grew legs, walked on land for a while, and turned right back around and eventually went back in the water, and his legs and stuff all evolved back off of him. But he still can breathe air. That makes zero sense. So he evolved all the way out from the ooze to land, adapted the ability to breathe air, grew legs, and then ultimately turned around, went back in the water, lost the legs and everything, but still has to breathe air. He evolved that way. Yet, again, there's no transitional forms between the two. And so when I compare evolutionary mindset or the evolutionary thought with theistic thought, that there either we evolved, and there's no way we evolved, just looking at hominids, without the relaxin and fontanelle, the first baby dies. The very first one dies. There is no time for natural selection over periods of time. The first one dies. It took a simultaneous reaction in two distinct creatures for this thing to work, while the first creature is also being prepped to feed the other one once it's born. That is absolute design. If you cannot see that design, then when you look at your car and your pistons are bouncing up and down as you step on your gas pedal, that evolved. Or did somebody actually put that thing together so that as I step on my gas pedal and release more fuel, the pistons move faster and the explosions take place faster, and so therefore it revs my engine and creates more momentum? See, that's design. Humans are more intricately designed than that. Let you in, Stanley. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm listening to what you're saying. There could be a third possibility that we don't know. If we take evolution out of the side. I'm saying I don't know because I'm asking the question.
Mute you, Stanley. Mute you. Don't enter. See, this is where you get confused because I told you I hold you accountable for what you say. You have every right to hold me accountable for what I say. Don't introduce something that you don't know. All right? You're back in.
Sir, I'm just saying that even if we take out evolution, because are you telling me that there was no atheist before evolution?
I don't believe that anybody's in. I've never met an atheist.
Well, you just met one. I don't believe in God. There's many atheists from Richard Dawkins
wouldn't say what you just said. An atheist would never say what you just said.
What did I say? I just asked you.
You said, I don't believe in God.
Yeah, I don't believe in the concept of God.
An atheist says there is no God. It's not a matter of belief.
No. That's not the definition of an atheist. No, it's not that definition. That's not the definition of an atheist. There is no God. We're not proclaiming a thing. An atheist is basically saying, you're coming with a proposal. I think there is a God. And we're saying to you, I don't believe you. That's an atheist. We're not.
No, it's not.
And we're even older.
Now,
yes, it is. I could go.
Hold on.
Let me go
I'm
going to
clarify
definition.
For you again. I'm going to clarify for you again. Wait a minute.
Okay.
Listen.
Let me go get the
listen,
definition.
Stanley. Listen, Stanley. Do you know where the word atheist comes from, Stanley? Huh?
I don't have to go. I don't have to go there. I just have to go get the definition. A
well, you do. You have to.
No, I'm going to the definition.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to mute you while I tell you what it is, while you find your definition. See, the word theism or a theist believes that there's a God because theist means God, theos. It means God. An atheist is the exact same word with the negative ah on the front of it. So a theist is there's a God. An atheist, there's no God. It's as simple as that. And then you have what's called an agnostic. A gnostic is someone who says, I have knowledge. An agnostic with the same negative says, I have no knowledge. In other words, I'm just not convinced that there's a God. Most of the people who I've met who claim to be atheists are not. They're agnostics.
They're atheists. I'm going to the definition. The atheist is, I'm going to the definition. An atheist is a person who disbelieve or like belief in the existence of a God. That's exactly what I said.
Okay.
I do not believe what there is in the existence of the God. And I'm telling you, as an atheist, and you're saying things that because I've read it, and I believe it. Agnostic is true. Agnostic is about knowledge. Atheist is about, I'm an atheist agnostic. That means I do not believe there is a God, but I do not know if there is. That's what I am. And I have no problem with that. That is what I am. That's what I believe.
Stanley, you can make up whatever designation you want. I'm not going to argue with you about that. But no atheist. As a matter of fact, this is what I suggest you do. Contact American Atheists, because I'm actually a member. All right, I've been a member since 86. All right, I'm sorry, 96. Contact American Atheists and tell them, you know, that you're not convinced there's a God. And see what they say to you. Contact them. Okay, so I'm not going to argue with about that. Convince an atheist.
Okay, but what do you disagree with what I just said? I do not believe there is a God. I went to the definition of what it is. You told me no, it's not true.
Listen. I don't disagree with what you can say whatever you want to be. But I'm telling
you
the word atheist.
No, you said
listen,
you want facts. Go ahead.
Stanley, listen. An atheist believes there's no God. The word atheist means
no, it's not.
No.
I'm going to the
Stanley,
definition of the dictionary. Are you telling me?
Not going to argue with you about it. So we don't agree. No, it's
okay.
We don't disagree. It's a Greek word. Do you read Greek, Stanley? Do you read
Look,
Greek?
I didn't read the
Do
Greek
Do you
word.
Read
I'm
Greek?
No, I didn't.
Okay, well,
but that doesn't mean because I didn't read Greek word.
Stanley.
I went to Google. I just did the research, and that's what he said. So
Stanley.
Come back to those people and say they're wrong, okay? Don't come
Stanley.
To me and say I'm doing something stupid
Stanley.
And I'm not right,
Stanley.
You know?
I didn't say you're doing something stupid, all right?
No,
listen,
but you are acknowledging I'm doing something stupid. You're telling me go with the terms. I said, fine, let me go to the dictionary.
All right,
I
I'm
just
not gonna
said
argue
the
you,
dictionary.
I'm not going to
argue. We're not going to
argue.
Argue. Fine.
You can explain your mint and julep. All right, I don't care. All right, but the word atheist means no God. All right.
Okay, that's what you believe, and I don't believe that. Okay, I don't believe that. Okay,
Stanley,
we have a different definition.
Stanley,
can we step on something?
Stanley, it's not a belief. It's what the word is. All right, but I'll accept what you say about you. All right, so I don't want to talk about that anymore. Let's move forward. Okay.
Okay.
We good? All right, so yeah, let's move forward. So when you claim to be a believer in evolution, explain to me from an evolutionary standpoint, if you would, sir, explain to me relaxin and the birth process.
I've told you I don't know all the term, like I said. I've said to you, why do I believe in evolution? I believe in evolution because of the evidence that we have. I don't know all the term that you said.
Okay.
And I've acknowledged from the beginning that you are more knowledgeable than you. That's the
first
thing
stop.
I said.
Slow down. Okay. You said because of the evidence. Okay, I want you to pick one thing of the evidence that you said.
And I told you the one thing.
What is
the DNA. I told you the one thing about the chromosome and the DNA. But and I told you that we have the same kind. We have the same kind of DNA as ape. And if we didn't, we even have a hybrid DNA. And that was one of the cases that they were making that would say that if evolution is not true. Okay, that's what
I
read.
Are you talking about?
Go ahead.
Okay, so what are you talking about? Are you talking about? Are you talking about Clint, the chimpanzee?
I'm talking about the case that was done was creation versus evolution. There was a case in the court that was done because there was a case in class that people there was a case in the court. PBS did that case and everything. Every year you could go to PBS.com.
It was a case in the court.
Yeah, there was a case.
Okay, now Okay, Stanley, I'm going to tell you what you see, because you're saying that you have evidence, but you don't know what case, you don't know about Clint.
Okay, no, find the case.
Clint was a chimpanzee, all right, that they did a blood comparison test with human beings with, all right, and they determined that our DNA was 96% similar. That's it. They would say, and in fact, let me put this is what I'll do for you, so you can research this. They would say, and they did say, in fact, I'll read it to you, I quote, despite the similarities in human and chimp genomes, scientists have identified some 40 million differences amongst 3 billion DNA molecules. 40 million differences amongst 3 billion DNA molecules or nucleotides in each of the 40 million genomes. Now, what about that says a monkey is a man? Here you go. I'll put the link in the room for you so you can research that. What I would suggest to you do, Stanley, it seems like you know more about what you're against. We ended up in this discussion, and you ended up in this primordial ooze that you're in right now because you have a high-powered opinion against what other people are doing. No one is seeking you out. Yes, no one is seeking you out, but I've talked to three different people today who have observed you going from show to show and basically just condemning people. That's what you do. You condemn
people.
And where we are, because I forced you back to what it is that you believe, and you're stuck.
I'm not stuck. They went to the case. The case is Kismiller versus Dover School District. So I'm not inventing things. And it was a program on PBS. It was a program on PBS. You can look at that Judgment Day that was basically making a case because the public school wanted teach creationism. It's a Kismiller versus Dover School District.
What was it again? Kismiller.
KITZMILLER versus Dover School District. You just have to go to PBS.org.
Dogger?
And
you said Dogger?
Dover, sorry. D-O-G? D-O, Dover.
Okay. Now Dover, I will look that up. I will. I absolutely will look that up. I will. But what I'm saying to you is that you say you believe the evidence that was presented in there. What was the evidence?
Yes, I do. I've told you the evidence was on the DNA when they asked the specialist of evolution. Okay, let me just go to see if they tell exactly.
So you don't know.
Let me just. No, I do know, but I don't remember everything.
But you
want
to regurgitate what you're reading in there to me.
I'm going to regurgitate what he said because you said you want precision.
No.
You want the stuff
no.
that they said. And I'm saying to you what I believe
Stanley.
He said. But
Stanley.
You are
Stanley.
Coming back to me
Stanley.
Saying, okay, go
Stanley.
Ahead.
Stanley, you said you believe in evolution because of the evidence. What evidence do you know? See, you want you,
DNA.
You
DNA. The you re- DNA.
What about the DNA,
DNA,
Stanley?
Okay, I've told you
what about
the
it?
DNA. That basically, it's about,
what about
the,
it?
The DNA. The, well, I've told you. The DNA is that what we have in common with the apes, that we have the same kind, same number of chromosomes than the apes. If we didn't have the same number of chromosomes than the apes, we wouldn't be able to prove that evolution is true.
Okay.
That's the
now,
big thing.
Listen. All right? You keep saying the DNA. What about the DNA?
I told you that. What about the DNA?
Is
when
it the number?
The DNA of a human being?
So are you
yes,
saying,
the number.
You say
the number,
it's the number
have,
of
yes.
chromosomes. So
yes.
so because we have the same number of chromosomes as the apes,
and
we're the apes. What, make
yes,
your point.
Because we have the same number of chromosomes and the same number
then,
because we have then it proves DNA, it proves evolution. Because he says, and I quote during, I'm telling you what he said. You can laugh like it is. Look at the thing. Before laughing,
Stanley,
look at it.
Stanley,
you're asking me to go.
And, I am
going to
look at
me,
it.
Okay, go.
Stanley.
Go look at
I,
it.
I'm
going to
look
I'm
at it
look.
Because that's what I do. But what I'm saying is you apparently did not look at it before you called this broadcast. I just can't.
No, I did. Sir,
okay,
I did look at it.
You explained to me.
I said it.
No,
I do not know all the terms. Okay.
Then don't say it. I just muted you because you see, I'm just trying. You keep telling me you believe in evidence of something, all right? And I'm asking you what evidence. You said the DNA. What about the DNA? Same number of chromosomes. So what are you saying? Because we have the same number of chromosomes as an ape, then what? And your answer was, then that proves evolution. No, it doesn't. At best, that would prove that you have the same number of chromosomes as an ape. That's all that would prove. How does that prove that we and apes are the same? Go ahead. How does it prove it, Stanley? Stanley? All right. I don't know what happened. It's still there, but at any rate, I appreciate people hanging out for this broadcast. I do. And Stanley, I don't want you to think that I'm trying to somehow make a mockery or anything of you, because that's not what I'm doing at all. What I'm trying to do is to help you put an end to your shenanigans. Now, what I'm talking about by your shenanigans is that in reality, what you would much rather be discussing with me is how horrible Christians are, how you don't need God to do all these great things on the earth, though every example that you cited were people who believed in God and who in fact lived their lives based upon their view of God, whether I agree with it or not. They did based upon their view of God, but you use these people to say they don't need God in order to do the things that they do. What that tells me is you have not. Have you read Martin Luther King's Birmingham letters? If you have, then you would recognize that, you know, whether I agree with him or not, he believes that he was serving a moral good and serving God by doing what he was doing. In fact, in his last speech, the I Have a Dream, I've been to the mountaintop, and God has allowed me to see the other side. I might not make it there, but God has allowed me to see it. All I know is I do God's will. If you've ever heard the I Have a Dream speech, Gandhi was Hindu. Mother Teresa, your three examples were all theists. And you called me to prove, to rant and rave that people don't need God to do good things. And yet you use three people who believe in God to illustrate
okay.
that they did good things.
Okay, yes, and I could come with people. Okay, let me come with a person who doesn't believe in God, Richard Branson. He doesn't believe in God, and he did great things.
What has he done?
Bill Gates doesn't believe. A lot of donation, a lot of humanities. Bill Gates, that basically went to Africa and gave a lot of donation, gave a lot of money, tried to basically give a lot of computers to African people and tried to get out of their poverty and everything. Richard
and
Branson,
you compare
a lot
that.
Of,
and you compare
and,
that.
I'm not comparing. Am I comparing? I'm not comparing. You asked
you
to come with another example,
listen,
another
listen,
example
listen,
of people who've done
listen,
great
Stanley,
things, and I'm not comparing.
Stanley, you called and used three examples of people
yes,
you don't
and
need.
You said,
listen, because all you're doing is proving my point.
No,
if
I'm not.
Listen to the broadcast,
I'm telling you that you told me to not. Okay.
Stanley,
go ahead.
If you did go back and listen to the broadcast earlier, then you did hear me say that many people can do good things in this world. Good is a subjective term. The question is, where will you spend eternity? What happens after this world? I acknowledge that people can do good
things. What happened after you're done this world, you're done. That's in my eyes. Now, you believe that you go,
okay, well,
you
that's,
become
that's,
eternal,
that's fine.
And I don't believe
that's fine.
That. I don't
that's
believe
fine.
That. Okay.
That's fine.
Thank you.
That's fine. But in the world of Stanley, what right then do you have to call people's broadcast and then to lambast people and say they don't need God to do these things? Yeah, it's true to Bill
because,
Gates. Gives Bill Gates gives a lot of money away. That in no way, if you want to just use, let's take God out of it. Let's look at it from purely a human standpoint. You cannot compare Bill Gates giving money away, which is very good and charitable, you know, and I'm sure he gets a heck of a tax deduction. But I'm not implying he does it for that reason. But yeah, he's worth, what, $43 billion, and he gives a lot away. His philanthropy is fantastic. But Mother Teresa went and lived amongst diseased people. Diseased people. Gandhi allowed himself to be beaten for the sake of his man, the people around. So did Martin. Home bombed, jailed, and eventually murdered. So you're talking about philanthropy versus self-sacrifice. Because the three theist people gave of themselves. The philanthropists gave of their loot, their money. So if I would compare the two, one is self-sacrifice and the other is philanthropy. Both morally laudable in this world, but one is morally superior to the other by worldly standards. And no one will disagree with that. No one will compare Bill Gates or Richard Dawson to Mother Teresa and Gandhi. No one.
I'm sorry. There's many people who does compare. Did you read? I've heard of the book of Inchkin that came with Mother Teresa. That he was against Mother Teresa, Christopher Hitchkin. That did do the book on Mother Teresa, that did say a lot of things that Mother Teresa was for poverty and things like that. I'm just saying things that he said. So don't say that nobody would be against Mother. You, in your view,
I'm going to stop you again because you lied again. I didn't say no one would be against Mother Teresa. See, you're in the world of Stanley. You have to actually listen to what I said. I said no one would compare Bill Gates to Mother Teresa, the work, his philanthropy, to her sacrifice. I didn't say no one would be against her. Quite frankly, I absolutely reject the theology of Mother Teresa, and I will tell you, if she died believing the theology that she held, then she will never see Jesus Christ, not in glory. So that's not my point at all. My
okay,
point is, you brought up philanthropy.
If I'm comparing Mother Teresa to Bill Gates, Bill Gates ain't just philanthropy. He's doing what he believes he needs to do, and I think in my eyes...
I'm
an entrepreneur. I have my own business, and that's what I do. I'm a technician, and that's what I do.
That's what you do? What do you do to give of yourself to mankind?
I try to treat people the best way that I can. I do charitable work. I go to the... Do I what?
What kind of charitable work?
I go to charitable... I try to go every week to charitable people or homeless people and everything, give them my time and things like that to help them, to listen to them and
so
not...
You feed the homeless?
Repeat what you said, I mean.
Do you feed the homeless?
Yes, I do.
So you feed the homeless. Where do you do it? Do you do it from a shelter?
Yes, I do.
What's the name of the shelter?
It's one of those shelters in Montreal. I don't know
the
perfect
What's
address
the
and everything. I go.
What's the name? What? No, I don't need the address. What's the name of it?
I don't have the name in front of my face. I just go to the same address to help them out, and I go and I spend time with homeless. La Fondation de Jean Lapointe, ça c'est une des fondations que je fais partie de ça. Là. La Fondation de Jean Lapointe qui est responsable. The Foundation of Jean Lapointe that's basically responsible for alcoholic and homeless people. That's one of them.
What's the name of it again?
I go there. La Fondation Jean Lapointe. Jean Lapointe.
Okay, the Foundation of Jean Lapointe?
What?
You said Jean Lapointe?
No, Jean Lapointe. Jean Lapointe.
The Foundation of Jean Lapointe. Yeah.
All
right.
Go ahead. That's one of
was
them.
Was he theistic?
Yeah, that's one
was
of
Jean
them.
Was Jean Lapointe theistic? Yeah. Was he theistic?
I don't know if he was theistic.
Did he believe in God?
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay, do me a favor. Do me a favor. When do you go there again?
In 2 weeks.
Okay, when you go there again, ask them about their origin. Ask them what is their mission statement. Okay?
Okay.
And I bet you dollars to donuts that they're theistic.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
And some of the
so
I'm
when
sure
you
some
fall,
of them are theistic. Okay.
No, I'm talking
what
about the organization because no atheist has ever created a charitable organization.
Wait. Are you saying that no atheists have done something good in this world?
No, I said no atheist has ever formed a charitable organization. Do you know why?
Okay,
Now you're going to listen. Atheists believe in survival of the fittest. They believe that it's natural selection, that if those people are out there starving, that they should die. Atheists are not charitable at all. Have you ever read Darwin or Huxley? Have you ever read them? It is survival of the fittest. If they are out there and cannot survive, it's because they could not survive, and evolution is their just reward. They should just die. No
Richard Dawkins Foundation? That's one of them. I'm just going to them because you say Richard Dawkins Foundation. That's one of them.
What is the
our mission
what
is to
do?
Support scientific. Wait, I'm listening. Our mission, the mission statement. Our mission is to support scientific education, critical thinking, and evidence-based understanding of the natural world in the quest of overcoming religion, fundamentalist superstition, intolerance, and human suffering. So you're saying no foundation was done. That's one.
I'm going to mute you again. I'm going to mute you again because that's not what I said. I said they've never created a charitable foundation. They don't feed anybody. They don't help anybody. They haven't built a hospital. They affect no disease, nothing. Their contribution is that we need to make sure people don't believe in God. And by the way, while you were reading that, what you were reading was the mission statement of the RichardDawkins.net. I actually pulled it up while you were talking, and it says, our mission is to support scientific education, critical thinking, overcome religious fundamentalism, superstition, intolerance, and suffering. So all you did was read a page that their whole focus is to be against the people who are doing the charitable work. They are against Gandhi. They are against Martin Luther King. They are against Mother Teresa. They are against
You really have a problem against atheists.
No,
get that.
I don't.
Yes,
I called you because
I thought that we were going to have a good conversation, and I acknowledged what you said. That's the first thing I said when I did the call.
So
did you remember that?
We're going to have a good, you know what, I'm coming up on the last 10 minutes of the broadcast. You thought we were going to have a good conversation, Stanley? Did you listen to what you said? You called and judged everybody. They don't need God to do what they're doing, but they're the only ones doing it. And you quote the Dawkins Foundation. I'll read it again because I actually went there while you were talking. Here we go right here. I put a link in the room for everyone. This is their mission, to support scientific education, critical thinking. Two, this is their goal, to overcome religious fundamentalism like Gandhi, like Mother Teresa, like Martin Luther King, superstition, intolerance, and suffering. Nothing about all the things you called to say, yeah, you know, you don't need God to do these things. Well, they're not doing them. There is no charitable atheistic organization. Not one. You named the Richard Dawkins Institute.
Mm-hmm. I named Richard Dawkins. No, you said there was no foundation. Okay. You said there was
no foundation.
I did the research.
I'm glad you stopped yourself and didn't lie on me again. That's not what I said. I said there's no atheistic organization that's doing charitable work. The very work if you go there and feed the homeless, I guarantee you they're theistic. So what I would offer to you is this. Before you begin to call people's broadcasts and say, you don't need God to do that, look at what the people who don't believe in God are doing.
What people are not believing in God are doing? They're doing great things. What do you mean?
Well, they're not doing the work you condemn.
Are you telling me that because you don't believe in God, you think that those people are not doing the thing? You kept on telling me that
they are not doing the works that you lauded as being great works that you don't need God to do. They're not doing any of them.
Okay.
They are not feeding the homeless. Let me read you from, let me take, we'll go out, we'll read the Bible again. Okay, I read this to you earlier, too. When you asked me about Christianity and you wanted to tell me what Christians weren't doing, and I agreed with you that many Christians are not doing it, but that doesn't mean that that's what the Bible teaches. James chapter 1, verse 22, be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is a man like a man observing his natural face in a mirror, for he observes himself, goes away, and immediately forgets what kind of man he is. But he who looks in the perfect law of liberty and continues in it is not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work. This one will be blessed in what he does. If anyone amongst you thinks he's religious and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this one's religion is useless. Pure and undefiled religion before God the Father is this: to visit orphans and widows in trouble, to keep oneself unspotted from the world. Let me read you something else from the second chapter. All right? He said this. He says, was Abraham, not our Abraham father, justified by works when he offered Isaac his son at the altar? Do you not see that faith was working together with works, and by works faith was made complete? The scripture was fulfilled, which says, Abraham believed God, and it was accounted unto him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God. You see, then, a man is justified by his works, and not by his faith only. Likewise, was not Rahab the harlot also justified by her works when she received the messengers and sent them out another way? For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is also a dead faith. From a biblical perspective, the things that that we do in the name of Christ, which involve charitable works, are done in the name of our God. And the same holds true of other theistic organizations. Islam has to perform, I believe, a salat, where they have to give away, you know, their charity to help the poor. And you know, the only organizations that don't do charitable works are atheists.
Wow. I don't agree.
The only
with
one.
You. But I don't agree with you.
Then take some time. I'm on tomorrow morning. Take some time and find one. Call me and give me one.
Okay.
Just one. That's all I'm asking you for. One.
So all the atheists that are doing, or who don't believe in God, or who are still doing those things, so why are they doing it? Why am I being nice and doing all those things? Why is it, if you want to take my example, why am I doing
thing
it
to do.
If I don't need God?
Because it's a good thing to do. It's good. It's a lot of people who don't believe in God. And there are a lot of people who are not convinced. Like I said, I don't know atheists, but it's a lot of people who are not convinced that there's a God who do good things. A lot of them.
And that's my point.
In this
and
world,
that's my point.
To do good things.
Yeah,
Gandhi did great things. I disagree with him theologically. Mother Teresa in this world did great things. I disagree with her theologically, but I acknowledge she did great things in this world. There are many people that do great things in this world. The question
So what is your issue? If we only could see what's in this world, shouldn't you judge somebody what they're doing in this world?
I didn't understand. I could barely hear you. Kind of like you muffled.
Sorry. Should you judge somebody of what he do in this world?
I don't think we should judge anybody on anything. You're the one who called the judge.
So you're saying to me that if somebody decides to kill 20 people, who decide to do whatever evil thing that he does, we shouldn't judge them and say that was wrong? And we shouldn't put them in prison? Are you telling me that all the people in prison should be let out?
I'm saying, I see how you get where you get.
No,
I
I'm
see
asking
exactly
you
how you get where you
you
get.
Said that,
no,
this,
don't
that,
don't ask me. That's a preposterous.
Okay, I'm asking the question. I'm asking the question.
No, you're not asking me that. All right?
Okay,
that
so
has
what,
nothing
am
to
I
do
asking,
with what
I'm,
said.
Now,
okay, now
what,
I am going
what did
to,
you say?
I'll say what I said again. I'll say what I said again. You are the one who called me judging people. I said I don't judge people. I don't. Now, if someone speeds, then they break the law, and the law takes care of them. If someone commits murder, then they violated the law, and the law will take care of them.
What makes you think that you don't judge people?
What makes me think I don't? Because I don't.
Yeah.
Well, I want to tell you. Listen to this. Listen, Stanley. Listen to this. All right? Everything in my flesh wants to judge you as a person, and I actually said this before you came on, all right? because I got a phone call said it's a waste of time talking to you because this is what you do. All right?
No.
But
right.
I said before
I
then
this,
that
this,
I don't
this is
charge.
Not...
Listen, Stanley. Actually, I had contact with three people on Facebook, by voicemail, and by email who are all familiar with you. Do you call other shows, Stanley?
Yeah, I've called many shows, yes.
Yeah, you call many shows, and you call, and you talk, and you talk, and you talk until you try to frustrate them.
No, I don't, I don't talk and then talk. No,
well, you
don't.
That's not your intent. That's not your intent.
No, I don't. No, I don't.
And that was the point I made, Stanley. When I started this before you called, go back and listen. In response to that, I can't judge your motives. Because when I judge your motives, then it's easy to dismiss you. I believe that you're sincere. I believe you're sincerely wrong. It's possible to be both. That's what I believe, Stanley. I believe you're sincerely wrong. As long as you want to talk to me, I will talk to you. I won't always do it on the air because people listen to the broadcast and they call, they listen to the broadcast because I'm teaching from a theistic worldview, which is what I told you when you first called me. But you can call my ministry line and talk to me anytime. I'll even take you for short amounts of time on the air. But I can't allow, you know, 2 hours to be dominated by this back and forth because you don't stand on any, you say you do, but you can't present anything you stand on beside the name of it. You can't drill down. You have not verified that the information that you're presenting is valid in any way, so much so that you have to go back and try to read it to even try to explain it. If you understand a thing, even at its most rudimentary level, you can explain it. You can explain it, and you have not been able to explain anything. You go to one word, DNA proves evolution. That's it. You haven't moved off that. How? The closest you got is we have the same number of chromosomes. Yeah, but what does that mean? You have not drilled down your own information. So I would recommend you do that. Anyway, I got like 2 minutes left of the broadcast. I'll give you 30 seconds. Go ahead.
There's nothing to say. I called you
all right,
and
well,
everything,
thank you.
acknowledging what you said in the beginning, and acknowledging what you said in the beginning. I don't think you judge. Fine. You're saying you don't judge. I don't think I judge. And I do call those shows and everything, and I do make things, Christian things of what they say, because a lot of them don't know their history, don't have the same knowledge than you do. I'm sorry to say they don't.
Okay. And you know what? I agree with that. But what I submit to you is you don't know the history of evolution. You don't know the things you say. So you're as guilty as they are.
No,
you're as guilty as they are. Yeah.
Is there
no,
stuff
you're
I
as
need
guilty.
To improve?
Stanley,
yes. No,
Stanley,
I'm not as guilty as
you're
they
as
are.
Guilty okay, as they are. What I would recommend you do is know why you believe what you believe. Know why before you condemn other people for not knowing why they believe what they believe. You know
what
why
do you,
you
mean,
believe
why
what you believe first.
What do you mean?
Know
why
you
believe
what
that?
You believe. Don't just say, I believe evolution because of DNA.
No, no, but
you
I'm asking you the question, what do you mean? Why
I
do
got
I 30
seconds,
what?
And I'm going off air.
Okay,
I got
no 30 problem,
seconds,
no problem.
And the music's going to play. I'll be on the air tomorrow morning. I'll give you 10 minutes, or you can call me tonight. All right? I put my ministry line in there. If you're not online, 614-388-8838. I'll be back home at about 11 p.m., okay? Thank you, Stanley. Guys, I appreciate you listening in. Got 10 seconds left. I know it's been tedious, but I appreciate the Stanley call. I appreciate his position. I look forward to talking to him in the future, and I look forward to seeing you guys. See you next time.
Thank you for joining me for today's edition of ARC Studies Live. I'm Rick Young. The Apologist segment focuses exclusively on addressing your questions and comments concerning hardcore doctrinal issues relating to biblical difficulties, countercult studies, and Christian apologetics. For more information about ARC, go to the World Wide Web at www.arcstudies.org. Again, that's www.artstudies.org. Thank you.